It's time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
And great to have you with us on this October 10th, 2023. Busy show tonight. We'll be joined by today, all depends on when you're watching and where, I guess. We got a lot to get into over the next 60 minutes. Sam Yarnell will be by in about 30 minutes. We'll get into the Monday Night Football game with him, get his reaction. Contender Pretender Tuesday as well. Russell Baxter, pro football guru, longtime NFL writer, historian, somebody who brings a lot of perspective to the game will join us. But we kick it off with college football today. And who better to do that with than our good friend, the Bill Bender of the Sporting News, who stops by the show. All right, Bill, everybody's got an opinion on it, and I haven't heard yours, so I want to get it. Mario Cristobal, and obviously what took place at Miami on Saturday night against Georgia Tech, opting not to take a knee, opting to run the football. Ball gets fumbled. Georgia Tech winds up winning the game. It basically ends Miami's hopes at the college football playoff, I think a lot of people would agree. What did you make of what transpired Saturday night in the game and then everything that's transpired since with sort of his reaction to it and the way he's handled the situation?
Well, he's trying, but there's no excuse, obviously. You kneel the ball. You it's ranging from the head. They didn't practice a victory formation to everything in from there and trying to pass it along. I mean, that was inexcusable. I don't know how you walk into your locker room and explain that to your kids. I mean, I know wonky things happen in college football all the time, but that combined with how Georgia Tech scored to win the game are two really inexcusable things. I don't know why these coaches overthink things and just take a snap, kneel the ball. That's it. Game over. Go home. Don't try to cover the spread. Don't try to get an extra first down or an extra rep. You get it, especially the way they played, right? That was, they were like three touchdown favorites in that game. I would want to get out of that game as soon as possible. And every quarterback should be able to take a snap or even a shotgun snap, catch it, and kneel the game out.
How costly is that when it comes to, you know, I mean, everybody jumps into the whole job security thing. Oh, fire them. You know, don't let them coach another game. There's always that initial knee-jerk reaction. If things fall apart for Miami, I mean, I know you got to look at the overall picture here, but how much does something like this impact a guy long-term?
I mean, it's going to follow them the rest of the season because it's plus one. And they're in that ACC race where they literally went from a team that I was looking at last week and profiling a little bit as a playoff sleeper, undefeated, good defense. Tyler Van Dyke had been playing so well to now no margin for error. North Carolina, Louisville, Florida State, Duke, all of those teams ahead of them in the pecking order. I don't think it means a fireable offense. There's some people that would say that is. I tell you what, NFL coach does that, they're probably fired at the end of the season somehow, right? Because it would cost them a playoff berth or something like that, and they would probably get fired. But I think Mario faces a challenge in trying to continue to build that Miami program. But I was talking to high school coaches about this. I was talking to my son's junior high coaches about it. I just don't know how you walk in a locker room or walk out of a parking lot after you do that.
I don't either. It's hard to fathom. A lot of unbeaten teams still in college football. Give me the one that surprises you the most so far to still see unbeaten.
Well, I mean, absent the – got to give the group of five schools love. Sure. James Madison, Liberty, and Air Force, all of those schools are definitely doing their thing. But I don't think any of those schools will make the playoff, even if they do go undefeated. That's just the way this works, unfortunately, in a 14 format. So out of the Power Five unbeaten surprise school, I would say Louisville, obviously. I think we talked in the offseason. I kind of – pat myself on the back a little bit because I said they if you were throwing darts and saying who's this year's TCU, they kind of fit the profile. And all new coach, a lot of transfers, good quarterback with experience, and they've been impressive through six games. Did I think they were going to be 6-0? No. Did I think they were going to beat Notre Dame? No. But Jeff Brohm clearly has it going on there sooner than expected, and it's another example of why fit matters in college football.
You know, Michigan so far at number two in the country, and you heard the accolades coming from the Minnesota head coach talking about, you know, this is the best team we faced, how good they were. You know, we know how good Georgia is. If you put Michigan and Georgia on a neutral field right now, what do you think happens?
Georgia would still win, but the gap is not what it was a couple years ago when Georgia was 34-11 at the the Orange Bowl, where it was clear 10 snaps in that Georgia had the better roster. Well, Georgia's had 25 guys go to the NFL since. Michigan has built a roster that has used the transfer portal. Do they have the five-star guys? I don't know. But they look, if this makes sense, and I'm trying to say this eloquently as possible, Michigan kind of looks like Georgia 2 years ago with less five-star guys. They are brutal on defense. I mean, there was a time when going to a Big Ten school at night, you were happy to get out 10-point win. They were up 10 points 5 minutes in, and that game was over for all intents and purposes. This is a nasty Michigan team with a ton of experience on both sides, and they play Georgia's style. I think I don't know if you agree. I do think those two have separated themselves a little bit from everybody else.
I do. I absolutely agree with you, which is why I brought them up. USC in the pack, obviously, you know, unbeaten. Yeah, they had the narrow win against Colorado, but they were up big late in that game before Colorado sort of closed the gap, made it a little bit interesting. The three overtime win here against Arizona. What are your concerns right now when it comes to USC if we're to take them seriously as a playoff contender?
Well, you know, Lincoln Riley should send Mario a card because some of the late game management against Arizona was off the charts bad.
Yeah.
You know, they have a first and goal. They throw a pass. Caleb Williams fumbles a snap. They botched the field goal. They're lucky they didn't lose to Arizona. And that defense is going the same old questions. We've done this for 2 years now. When's that defense going to cost them? And they have to go through, and I'm looking at it right now. There are seven teams in the Pac-12 that are ranked. There are seven teams in the Pac-12 with one loss or less. And here's the thing. I think the Pac-12 is the best conference right now. But I also think it's the conference that can cannibalize itself out of the playoff, which is wild. I mean, yeah, I really do, because you could take it all the way down to Colorado and Deion. I mean, you have to play an elite quarterback, or not elite quarterback, a competent to good to elite quarterback 9 out of 12 times in the Pac-12.
100% right.
Every other conference.
Yeah, right? I was sitting there actually when you were about to say the quarterback number. I was like, I wonder how many it actually is. You know, and 9 is probably a fair number. There's a lot of good quarterbacks in that conference that can certainly make a lot of teams' lives miserable. And I agree. I mean, there is the possibility of some cannibalization there. So far, USC has been able to make it through. So does that mean if USC, given how good that conference is, if USC can stay unbeaten, if USC can continue to win, it's going to curry them more favor as we get later into this thing with the playoff selection process?
Well, yeah, I think so. And I'm trying to figure out, so we've got a story, you can help me write this as we speak. We have this four chairs, five teams. And I'm trying to figure out which conference is situated the best. And I think the SEC and the Big Ten are kind of givens to me. Like, right, whoever wins the Big Ten East is going to get in, and Georgia's probably going to get in. So you're playing musical chairs with these other three conferences that are very similar. I think the one that's in the most trouble, potentially, is the Big 12. So what if we're sitting – here's another interesting question I think about these things. Sorry, I'm off the rails
a little bit.
But what if the last debate is one-loss USC versus one-loss Oklahoma? What are we going to do then with Lincoln Riley's old school and his new school? And it really could come down to those two teams at the end of the road.
What do you make of Notre Dame? You know, the two losses, obviously the close one against Ohio State, and then what transpired against Louisville this weekend, and sort of where we are with Notre Dame and some of the shine being taken off Marcus Freeman.
You know, it goes both ways. So I empathize with the fact that they've had to play three straight night games and these are college kids, and that your body clock can get thrown off. The emotions of that Ohio State game, which I was at, followed by the emotions of being Duke's all-in game, and then Louisville's all-in game. But that's why you're Notre Dame. You know, I'm saying this in the same vein that I watched TCU beat four straight opponents, ranked opponents last year, and have to just do it every week. And that's why TCU was able to string together enough wins to put together this Cinderella season. You're still Notre Dame. You still got to go in, and their energy, talking to some people, Brian Driscoll at Irish Breakdown, he was telling me their energy just wasn't there. So what do you do now? Now, how much motivation do you have against your rival coming into your place with the best player in the country and Caleb Williams? It's going to be tough. So I think there's a little bit of shine off Marcus Freeman right now, and they're going to have to prove it. And that's life at Notre Dame. It's the tough, it's the equivalent of coaching the Cowboys Absolutely. In the NFL. It's yeah. so hard to coach that place because of the expectations versus reality factor.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Finish with the best. You know, I'll save the best for last here. Georgia steamrolling teams. I mean, when they're beating top 25 teams by the margins that they're beating teams, is there anything you see in them that would give you pause right now, or are they just that good?
Well, they reminded everybody last weekend how good they are. And the running game isn't quite as bully ball as usual, but they lead the SEC in passing yards, which is just, really? Georgia does? Yes, because they have Brock Bowers. And I think Brock Bowers deserves a little Heisman love. I think their defense, while not, again, flush with first-round guys, those guys are still all very good football players, and there's a couple first-rounders on that defense. And they needed that Kentucky game to remind everybody. And Kirby being the master of – I don't know how these guys do it, Jason. I don't know how you Kirby Smart can convince 85 kids that are 4- and 5-star future NFL guys that they're underdogs, but he does it. And I kind of roll my eyes at that kind of stuff, but he's able to do it, and the results speak for themselves. I think Georgia is the best team in the SEC, and we're going to all know where we are when they finally do lose a football game. That's what the territory they're in right now.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Hopefully Ryan Day will forgive me and not hold it against me and bring it up in a post-game press conference that I didn't talk about Ohio State during our conversation today. Bill Bender does a great job on college football for the Sporting News. Check out his work. Always good to talk to you, my friend. Be well.
Hey, thanks for having me. Take care.
Bill Bender giving us some time on the show. All right, as we roll along, we'll get into the NFL. Our friend Russell Baxter drops by, profootballguru.com, longtime NFL writer. That as we continue with the Sports Wrap on this Tuesday. Good to have you with us. Rolling along on this Tuesday edition of the Sports Wrap. Good to have you with us. Thanks to Bill Bender for hanging out with us from the Sporting News, talking some college football. Let's do some NFL conversation. Our good friend Russell Baxter is here. Profootballguru.com. Longtime NFL writer. Can I call you NFL historian, Russell Baxter?
Oh, I have no problem with that. I mean, I probably enjoyed Jason writing history more than I do current stuff. And I love the current stuff.
Yeah.
But history is always, it's one of the reasons I've been going out to the Pro Football Hall of Fame since 1989.
Jesus.
I've missed a couple of years because of some things and stuff like that. But my first year out there was Willie Wood, Art Shell, Mel Blunt, and Terry Bradshaw.
Wow.
The ceremony was on the steps. That was Bradshaw's great speech about Mike Webster's butt one more time, and later did that when Mike went in. The Hall of Fame game was in the afternoon at the stadium. The stadium wasn't renovated. Totally different situation than it is now. It has blossomed. Now you have the Hall of Fame Village. The stadium is huge. It's still a very, very worthwhile trip. The hall is probably twice the size as it was. But, I love my history. There's no doubt about it.
I love that. And I want to talk to you about Dick Butkus before we wrap up this conversation today. First of all, just to the most recent and what we saw on Monday Night Football, and obviously, the Raiders get a win. It wasn't a very it wasn't a very appealing game to watch, let's be honest. Offensively, watching these two teams jockey back and forth and the turnovers and all of that. What do you make through the first 5 weeks of what we've seen from Jordan Love and trying to project what he looks like as we move forward?
Well, probably so far more athlete than quarterback. You know, you can see signs and so on. But I, first off, I think not having Aaron Jones for a couple of games certainly hurts. AJ Dillon is a plow horse. Aaron Jones is one of the most versatile backs in the league. Not having him as an outlet guy is definitely a problem. Second off, there's a lot of pressure on any Packers quarterback with that defense. Joe Barry's defense, he was supposed to be the latest guy to fix it. It's not getting fixed. You can run the ball on them. Now, the Raiders have been horrific running the football, although last night Josh Jacobs got, this sounds weird for the guy who led the league in rushing last year, he had a season-best 69 yards rushing last night. So that should tell you something about the Raiders. And by the way, the Raiders have played 5 games this year. We know Josh McDaniels is supposed to be an offensive guy. Jason, they've yet to hit the 20-point mark. They've won, they're 2-3, but they've yet to score at least 20 points in any game in this league now where offense kind of rules, if you think about it. So, Jordan Love was really, last night was really the first game where he really self-destructed as much with the turnovers and so on. I mean, early in the year, they lost to Atlanta and he played fairly well. But now as time wears on and you have an offensive line there missing people as well, so it's tough. I mean, he doesn't have much of a resume, okay? I think he had one start coming into the season. He started so far this season and so on. The Packers are – listen, I think the ominous signs was less about Monday night and it was more that Thursday night game against the Lions where Detroit really put it to them on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And here's the thing about the Raiders, too, by the way. I still think I'm more of the wait-and-see approach. I know we're in this microwave world where everybody wants it fast and wants it now. I'm still very much of the wait-and-see approach. You know, you could say he sat there and, you know, he's been in the NFL for a few years, but nothing can replace what it's like actually being out there under the lights.
Correct.
And I don't care about preseason and all that stuff where you're playing against guys who are, you know, working construction jobs now or on practice squads. Give me a thought.
By the way, I agree with you. I mean, there is too much of a, I have a saying, there's so much knee jerk reaction, on a week to week basis.
Yeah.
And as I like to remind people, the word jerk is involved when you say knee jerk. So you have a lot of people who, you know, I always kid after week one, Jason, you look around the fan bases on the internet and stuff like that. And 16 teams, fan bases think they're only going undefeated. 16 team fan bases think they're going to have the number one pick in the draft.
Yep.
So it's there's no in between and there's no in between. And if we haven't learned anything about teams getting hot at the right, the Buccaneers were 7-5 a couple of years ago, got hot down the stretch. The Rams were in the middle of a 3-game losing streak in the middle of the season in 2021. They put it together. They won the Super Bowl. So there's a long way to go here and so on. So I'm not ready to put Jordan Love on the scrap heap or Canton, Ohio.
Justin Jefferson hits IR. He's going to be out for 4 weeks. I mean, look, this team's 1-4. You've got the trade deadline approaching. Minnesota's not going anywhere this year. They are a flawed team. Nothing encapsulates Minnesota for me, Russell, more than the first play from scrimmage on Sunday. They turn the football over in this highly coveted matchup against the Chiefs. They turn the football over on the first play from scrimmage. What do you do if you are this organization right now that sort of feels like in some ways it's at an intersection?
You know, they brought in Kevin O'Connell last year, and I think they thought with the weapons they had, Jason, that they could just outscore teams. And now, listen, I understand the name of the game is to have more points than the other team, okay? But when you go 13-4, and by the end of the year, you've given up more points than you scored during the season, that's hard to do, okay? So they brought in Brian Flores, but he didn't, you know, so far, they don't really have the personnel defensively. I mean, last year they won a division with the 31st ranked defense in the league, and the defense has been a problem for them the last couple of years. They've got some great pieces. Daniel Hunter is a great pass rusher. Harrison Smith is probably in the midst of a Hall of Fame career, if you ask me, the safety. But they don't have enough bodies on that side of the ball. And I think they're doing their best. And again, when you put pressure on the offense, because your defense can't stop anyone, you're liable to turn over the ball like 12 times in five games. And that's exactly what the Vikings have done. They have the most turnovers in the league.
As a guy with perspective historically on this game, I think this is a great question to ask you. We've seen Miami putting up these prolific offensive numbers. Granted, they did struggle against Buffalo. I think they'll do better the second time around against them, right, especially when you look at some of the injuries right now that Buffalo's dealing with on the defensive side of the ball. All that being said, you know, we start to hear the comparisons, greatest show on turf and the Rams and yes, what they did. Put this in some historical context, what the Dolphins are doing and how you stack it up to other great offensive teams you've seen around the league over the years.
The one thing that impresses me about Miami so far is their ability to run the football. Okay. Now, Miami, this is mind-blowing. Miami has led the NFL in rushing. Now, I'm not saying you have to lead the NFL. They haven't led the NFL in rushing since 1972.
Wow.
Led the league, which was also the year.
Wow, that's staggering. I did not realize it had been that long.
They've had years where they've led the AFC, but not the league. I mean, listen, take it for what it's worth. And that was a different game back then. Of course, 1972 was the first time, and we've seen it several times since then, Jason, where a team had 2,000-yard rushers. That was kind of how the game was. It was Larry Zonka and Mercury Morris. Actually, I've been working on a piece. Could this be a year where the Dolphins not only lead the league in rushing? By the way, they haven't had a 1,000-yard runner since Jay Ajayi in 2016. Okay, so this will give you an idea of how one-dimensional they've been. How funny would it be that you haven't led the league in rushing since 1972, but maybe you have 2,000-yard runners this year in the chain and Raheem Mostert? I mean, think about how fast Raheem Mostert is, okay? And then you look at the rookie, and it's like attracting. I would like to see wind sprints between those two guys and Tyreek Hill, okay? Or put the three of them in somebody and you and I on like a relay team, okay? That's a very, very fast football team. But, I mean, we have seen some of these prolific passing attacks. We saw Peyton Manning throw 55 touchdowns and set the record for yards and so on. You better have some ability to stop the other team because, I'll make sure I quote myself, the top 13 teams in NFL history with the most points in a season don't have a Super Bowl trophy.
Wow. Really?
Yes. I think I've said to you before, it's one of my worst dad jokes. The greatest offensive coordinator in NFL history is Mr. Miyagi because he always stressed balance.
Russell Baxter hanging out with us, ProFootballGuru.com. You're watching right now, and you're up there in the Northeast in the belly of the beast. You're watching right now. You're watching right now sort of the disintegration of the Patriots as we know it. And it's tough to watch. I thought it was a foregone conclusion that Bill Belichick would surpass, you know, Don Shula. I thought there's no way he doesn't wind up the winningest head coach in the history of the NFL. It might not happen, Russell. There's a chance there's a chance he doesn't get there because let's say it continues to go the way it is with the Patriots and Robert Kraft finds an exit strategy and Bill Belichick's out. Are there really going to be teams running to hire Bill Belichick at this stage of his life?
Well, it's funny you said that because I've been thinking about this. I mean, because I can't get 72-3 out of my mind. And that's the last two games, 72-3. And I watched Bill Belichick, and I don't go nuts on body language and all that and try to evaluate human beings through press conferences and so on. I think, I don't know why I think this, but I'll just say it. I wouldn't be surprised if Bill Belichick retired before he was fired.
Wow.
Because I think the game means so much to him that he has to, I mean, he had nothing to say the other day. And I know he's not a man of many words. I understand that. I understand what he likes to do with the press and the quotes and all that stuff. Although he's a little funnier. I had a chance to meet him once and he's a little more jovial than you would think. But I think he's at a loss here to watch this. This is the kind of stuff that he used to do to teams and humble them. And it's hard to watch no matter who the team is, because when you see football like this, it's disturbing because the team looks lifeless. And, Mac Jones throws the pick six. I'm still trying to figure out who he is throwing it to, the one that Tyrann Mathieu stepped in. Almost like blind panic. And, I do a show with John Rook. I know you know John Rook is the public address of Downtown. I've been doing Patriots playbook with him for like 23 years. And we have a show tomorrow afternoon. And I'm safe to say I think it's going to be very, very interesting because there's losing. And, if you really take a close look, here's the thing that's mind-boggling. I haven't updated the number. If you take out the Patriots' wins over the Jets since 2020, they're like 10 or 11 games under 500.
Staggering. You can argue right now, they're the worst team in football.
Well, when
are they worse than the Bears?
My power rankings will be out later, probably within the hour. And there's only 32 teams in the league, but there are a couple I was tempted to put at 35 and 36.
It really is. Staggering.
I mean, we've seen some bad football, but over a two game stretch, that was horrific.
You're a historian of the game, as I've chronicled here. Dick Butkus passed away last week, and obviously a lot of people have so many things to say about him. Having been around the game as long as you have, and I'm sure having interacted with him at some point, try and give me some perspective on what he meant to the league during his playing days, post-career, and sort of how, the position that he played, sort of evolved through the years and how much he was a part of that.
Well, the legacy of middle linebackers with the Chicago Bears is unquestioned. They have four of them in the Hall of Fame. Bill George, who some people say was the original middle linebacker, Butkus, Mike Singletary, and Brian Urlacher. For years, Jason, I'll have to tell you this, middle linebacker was the glamour position defensively. Sam Huff, Jack Lambert, Tommy Nobis, some guys who are not in the Hall of Fame, who were great. Mike Curtis, who was told that you're always supposed to tackle the ball carrier. So when a guy ran on the field at Baltimore one year and tried to take the ball, Mike took him out. So so it's Ray Lewis, who played middle and inside linebacker. You think about what these guys have meant to the league, that toughness. And when you say Butkus, it just is toughness. Okay? I mean, Rocky Balboa had a big dog named Butkus. That was a big, tough dog. And it just, the words like Bronco Nagurski. Okay? That's toughness. I got a chance to meet him, after he was retired. He was actually in a press box in Pittsburgh for a preseason game and so on. And I think, in some ways, this is going to be a weird analogy, but I know you'll understand it. He reminds me a little of George Foreman. George Foreman, who had this nastiness in the ring, almost like this Clubber Lang image before there was Clubber Lang. He pummeled Joe Frazier into retirement. And then he left and he came back and he makes people laugh and he sells grills and all that. And he did that. Now, when Dick Butkus left and then went on, he did television.
Yeah.
Didn't he do Saved by the Bell?
He definitely did a TV show. No, but I think Bob Golic did Saved by the Bell. But he did TV. He definitely did comedy. Yes.
Right. And, of course, to me, the greatest set of series of commercials in the history of television, the light beer commercial.
Tastes great.
Which I just got done putting one on one of my pages, the one where him and Bubba Smith we're getting ready to play tennis.
Yeah.
Okay. So he was like more lovable, laughable. And even, and then Sassy, here's the thing about the Hall of Fame I love. There's one thing, you see the guys on TV, the images of what you think they are. And then they stand in front of that podium and talk. And it's mesmerizing. It's absolutely mesmerizing. And I remember Dick Butkus crying during his induction speech. But, you know, oh no, Dick Butkus crying. He's, you know, toughness and so on. But It shows the difference between the man and the player. And he meant an awful lot. He's the poster child for defense or the history of the NFL. And I'm not saying there's not other great players,
sure.
Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White, but if you pin down my generation, I know there are people in this generation today. If you say the word Butkus, only means one thing. Mm. And it just only means one thing. And, you know, he was very visible after his career. He didn't even play that long either. I mean, he only played 9 years, but the brutality of what he did was, and I like to remind people, it was different times in terms of playoffs and everything, Jason. In 1965, he was one of two first round draft choices by the Bears. The other guy was some guy named Gale Sayers.
Sayers
and Butkus. Who had?
Can we grade that draft? If we were grading that draft we'd graded it pretty well.
I think I might get in. I'm going to call Mel and tell me what he thinks and so on. But here's the thing: neither one of those gentlemen ever played in a postseason game.
It's amazing.
Different era, different playoffs, yes. Et cetera,
different
et cetera.
System. Yeah. And in a day and age where somebody has something bad to say about just about everybody, I can't find anybody. I can't find anybody with a bad word to say about Dick Butkus. And the guy lived 80 years.
If you did and Dick found out, Dick would find the guy.
Russell Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com. He says he's got his power rankings coming out today. Make sure and go check those out. It's always good to catch up with you, my friend. Let's do it again soon, huh?
Yes, and I'll make sure I read my emails from now on.
It's okay. It's overrated. Russell Baxter, ladies and gentlemen, always love talking to him. All right. Lots more to do as we continue on the show. Don't go anywhere. Sam Yarnell is around the corner. We'll go through the Monday Night Football game. We'll also get some thoughts with him. Contender Pretender Tuesday. Who do we got and where are they? I'll have to stick around for that. Don't go anywhere. We proceed on this Tuesday edition of the Sports Wrap. If you are not subscribed to the podcast, we are on all your favorite podcasting platforms. You can watch us daily 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern to 1 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, usually. Today we were about 15 minutes late, but we can do that because I'm not on television right now. Right now being the operative word there. Thank you so far to Russell Baxter for hanging out with us, ProFootballGuru.com. I just love the historical perspective he brings to the conversation. Bill Bender talked college football with us as well. And now it's time to say hello to a much younger, fresher, tanner than me. It's not, look at me. I mean, it's hard to not be tanner than me. Sam Yarnell is here. Sporting some Callaway gear, huh? They give you that for free?
I wish. Hey, Callaway Golf, if you want to sponsor me, my handicap is only like 14 now. So let's do it.
14. Are you kicking balls in? Are you doing like the Ahmad Rashad and kicking balls into the fairway? Can I tell you enough? Oh, God, I'm going to do this. Ahmad Rashad. Oh, God. I've already interviewed him once in my life, so I don't need to interview him again. He won't hate me if he hates me for saying this. He is a notorious, from what I have been told, Ahmad is a notorious cheater on the golf course. Michael Jordan's personal interviewer. Yeah. He used to kick ball. Like, I used to, and I hate saying this because I used to play in a celebrity golf tournament, and he kicks balls into the fairway. Yeah. He does. It's true. He Donald Trumps it.
Does he drive on the green? Donald Trump drives on the green.
Well, actually, seniors literally drive on the green.
Yeah. So what you're about to say is that they have handicap cards, yeah, which have special tires, and you are allowed to drive on the green. But no, at like the Trump golf courses, there are videos on social media. He just drives his cart up to his putt.
I hate to say, he actually has a course right outside New York City that when you go, I think it's over, not the Verrazano, I forget which bridge it is. When you go over the bridge, his course is on the right, and it's a links style course, and it looks amazing. And as much as I would never want to put any money in anything that has Donald Trump attached to it, it's a course that it looks like it'd be a lot of fun to play. Because I'm more made for links style, because I spray the ball around. I'm long, but I sometimes can get a little wild with the driver. Anyway, enough about the golf, because it's not really golf season anymore, unless you live out here in Palm Springs where it's always golf season. Let's talk some NFL and obviously get into the Monday Night Football game last night. My God, this was a tough game to watch. I mean, thankfully, I was bowling, so I was just catching glimpses of it. Every time I picked my head up, Sam, to look at this game, it felt like there was another turnover.
Yeah, it was really a competition of who could play the better bad football, honestly. It was a hard game to watch. Jordan Love, like over the last 2 weeks, he may have proven that maybe he's not as much the guy, especially at least not the guy right now that a lot of Green Bay fans and Green Bay backers and fantasy managers may have thought that he was. Jimmy G, listen, Las Vegas Raiders. Wow, thinking? dating myself there. I remember the what was that quarterback's name? The former Washington football player. I can't think of his name, the quarterback. Jason Taylor, maybe? Great Oakland Raider quarterback. Anyway, the current Las Vegas Raider quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, really showed last night that the Las Vegas Raiders are like what the Patriots would have been if it didn't all work out. If they didn't have Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, it's like the Patriots of the West are the Las Vegas Raiders. And we all know that the West Coast is not as good as the East Coast. That's so true. Obviously the Patriots of the East back then when they had all these pieces were better. But seriously, Josh McDaniels, Jimmy Garoppolo, they just can't figure it out together at all.
No. I just agreed with you when you said the East Coast is better than West Coast. Are you nuts? There's nothing better than the West Coast. Sam, you have not lived out here. I promise you, if I could get you to come out here and spend like 6 months, if sports betting was legal in California, I would move you here. I would pay you to move here because I don't think you'd ever go back to the East Coast with golf being what it is. L.A., San Diego,
wouldn't have enough money to golf because I have to give 50% of whatever I make back to the government in taxes.
Yeah, but they pay you more out here. And you get paid in sunshine. You ever hear that saying? I almost took a job in Miami years ago, and the program director for the station was like, we pay this much. And I was like, wait a minute, where's the rest of the salary? He goes, we pay you in sunshine. Sunshine. Yep. I don't go like big red flashing warning lights here on Jordan Love. He played a bad game. It's his fifth freaking game as a starter, you know, basically in the NFL. I'm not pushing the panic button on him. I know we like to do this. I was just talking about it with Russell Baxter a few minutes ago. It's too early in this process. He played a bad game last night. He's probably going to play more bad games between now and week 18. I don't go crazy about it.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, the Jordan Love situation for me has just always been so weird, so volatile. And the Packers are a notoriously not volatile organization, at least in my view, historically. And it's just weird for that organization to have put themselves in this position. Speaking of something that you talked about with Russell Baxter and the Patriots of the West, real quick, because I wasn't in yesterday, and that Patriots game on Sunday was real, real ugly. I'm with Baxter. I think Belichick retires before he gets the chance to get fired because of the respect for the game that Russell mentioned that he has. But that might be coming around the corner quicker than a lot of us think it is, because the Patriots are playing horrible football right now. And it's not even just the on-field product. It's the off-field management, which Bill Belichick is also in charge of. So they're in a terrible spot.
There's a lot more scenarios that I can game out that have him leaving, then I can't. I only find one scenario where he stays. And that scenario is Bob Kraft comes down and says, you are no longer running the draft. You are no longer the GM of this team. You are going to be a coach and nothing more. And if you don't like that, then let's find a graceful exit. That is the only scenario by which I could see him staying. There are so many other scenarios, though, where it doesn't make sense for him to stay. Is he going to want to hang around for a rebuild for the next 3 years while they go get a new quarterback, build up that quarterback, put a roster around that quarterback? You got to get a new GM in there. Is he going to want to deal with that? I don't see it.
He's too old. Respectfully, Bill Belichick, diehard Buffalo Bills fan saying this, Bill Belichick is one of the all-time football minds. I'm never going to say he's the greatest coach of all time because we named the Super Bowl trophy after the greatest coach of all time. But Bill Belichick is one of the best things that's ever happened to the sport of football. That said, he's too old to sit around for a rebuild. Jason, I think he's too old to even go to another team and implement his system.
That's what I said to That was the point I made to Russell Baxter. Right. I said, look, I can't see a scenario where he says, all right, fine. You want to let me go? Let me go. I'll go do what Brady did and go win somewhere else. First of all, I don't think there's a team out there that's saying, yes, I want to make Bill Belichick the next head coach of my football team, knowing that the only success that the guy has had in his life, and fairly or unfairly, the narrative is starting to really take shape here, that the only success the guy's ever had is with a guy named Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So I don't see teams that are going to be lining up, banging on the door of Bill Belichick to try and, you know, revive whatever is going on with their franchise. I just don't see it.
No, and well, just tinfoil hat here. What if he goes to the Raiders? Hey, Tom Brady out in Oakland. Jesus. It'd be Belichick and Brady again. Oakland. I said it again. Vegas.
Okay.
My gosh.
We're going to make you put a quarter in the jar when you do it. All right. I don't want to spend much more time on the Monday Night Football game because it was kind of a garbage game, so I'm not going to go too crazy about it. Let's do Contender Pretender. That's coming up on the other side. We'll get into three contenders, three pretenders after week five of the NFL season. Might be some surprises in there. Stick around. Sports Wrap rolls along, and it's Tuesday, and that means Contender Pretender for week five in the NFL. Who are our teams that are rising to the challenge, and who are the frauds? Fraud alert! Let's bring back our friend Sam Yarnell. All right, Sam, contender, pretender, who you got?
Jason, there's something wrong with the NFL, materially wrong. And we'll get into my contenders or pretenders here momentarily. But we've been doing this segment for 2 weeks now, and I've had trouble with it each week. And the reason for that is because the foam is so much higher than the milk in this league right now. I don't know if that's the right saying. I'm not old enough to know if that's the right saying. I also don't drink coffee. I think that refers to coffee.
Okay.
Or cream and milk, something, whatever. The problem is the NFL has stopped caring about the on-field product that the league is putting out. I haven't gone back and done the research far enough in years past, but I went back and did the research through the first 5 weeks of this year, and through the first 78 games of the NFL season, 39 of them have been decided by one score. It's exactly half. It feels like in a league of the best athletes in the world at this sport, more than half the games should be close. Because you can't really call a two-score game a close game. And that's one score, obviously, all the way up to 8 points. Also, when you look at these international series games like the London series, they're starting Germany this year. They did Mexico last year. they've become problematic for a variety of reasons, because we see teams get their sleep schedules messed up and then have to do, they consider it another one of the mini buys or short weeks, right? When you go from Thursday or from Monday into Sunday or Sunday into Thursday. My problem is that I didn't even mention the grass. Every other sport is played on regular natural grass, and the NFL continues to say that they have to play on artificial turf. They only want to do that because it's cheaper to maintain, and natural grass fields get beat up by the sport of football. See FedEx Field like 10 years ago. It was a mudslide every game, or when the Raiders used to play at the Coliseum out in Oakland before they moved to Las Vegas. The NFL has to figure something out about these games, because it's hard to come up with a list of contenders and pretenders every week, and you'll see that by my list today. And let's get into it, speaking of which, because my pretenders are not that different from last week. We've actually got two of the same teams making an appearance in the Cowboys and the Dolphins. The third I added is the Jaguars, because I know that after their win over the Bills, everyone is going to get overly high on the Jaguars, say they're back, and forget about the two ugly losses on their record already. This is a team that still doesn't have it offensively. It took them playing against a defense that was not only traveling much farther than Jacksonville was that week, also had lost their best player, Matt Milano, for the majority of the game. And they're one of their better defensive linemen in Daquan Jones. And they still had 11 points with 5 minutes to go in the game, or 10 minutes to go in the game. It's not an acceptable offense. Jacksonville will crumble. It's only a matter of time. They were able to blame Urban Meyer for a while in the past, but that's kind of, they've run out of excuses. The clock has run out on Trevor Lawrence. Cowboys, I mean, do I need to say anything? That game against the Niners, I'll leave it at that. And the Dolphins, they're going to be a different team without Devon Achane. The next 4 weeks, I believe he was officially placed on IR.
Was he put on IR? I've heard multiple weeks. I just want to make sure we're clear on that. I've not heard IR yet.
I heard that he was a candidate for it last night, and I think this morning they said that he was going to be placed on IR. But again, it's not season ending. It's just 4 weeks. So it's going to be hard. Fantasy managers, I don't know what you're going to do. If you were lucky enough to get Devon Achane early in draft or late in drafts or early in waiver wires, now you got to figure something else out. Pull some more magic out of your hat, but odds are you're already at the top of the league, so good luck. The Dolphins, they're frauds. I've been saying it all year. They'll prove themselves as frauds now. That's all I have to say. Those are my pretenders: Cowboys, Jaguars, Dolphins. Lock it in. None of them are getting anywhere close to the Super Bowl. Contenders. What a different route this week. I went with some teams that have been coming under a little bit of controversy and a team that everyone forgot about because they were on the bye. So we'll start with that team, the Buccaneers. No one remembered that they even existed because they were one of four teams on their bye this week. And let's not forget about them. Baker Mayfield is proving himself as a good game manager, and the NFC South is wide open. They may not get all the way to the Super Bowl, but I think we need to start considering the Buccaneers as serious playoff contenders. They could even win a game in the playoffs, maybe. Next is the Texans. Now, this really hurt. Obviously, that the Texans pick separated me from going 3-1 versus what I was 2-2.
I went 3-1, by the way. 3-1.
In Page versus the Prince. Whatever. I love the Texans offense, man. I'm falling in love with it. I'm falling in love with CJ Stroud. Tank Dell is absolutely electric. Damian Pierce is great. And D'Amico Ryans is a better coach than he was in San Francisco. Not that we didn't expect that with him stepping up into the head coach role, but I love the D'Amico Ryans defense. I love the D'Amico Ryans team, even more. Sell me down the river on the Houston Texans this year. I'm already on them to win the AFC South, which quite frankly doesn't look that great, but the Jaguars are going to crumble. Let's not forget. My last one is a team that's been so popular lately, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Obviously, the offensive problems with Matt Canada, but at the end of the day, this is just Mike Tomlin earning a spot on this list. I'm going to believe in Mike Tomlin as a head football coach, just like I believe in Bill Belichick is a head football coach. He's one of the greats of the game, and he'll figure out something with this Steelers team. Quite frankly, this contender pick is more predicated on them moving on for Matt Canada midseason, because I think if they do that, it unlocks an entire new team, an entire new offense, a new level of Kenny Pickett, an offensive coordinator that'll embrace the Pickett to Pickens connection as one like Cousins to Jefferson or Allen to Diggs. If they really embrace that and formulate the offense around that and get Najee Harris out of that offense, put Jaylen Warren in, that offense has potential to be explosive. They need a new person at the top of it, but if they get that, the Steelers are contenders this year.
That is contender pretender, as our friend Sammy Arnell sees it. My take? Just a little bit different. When it comes to the pretenders, I'm going to say the entire AFC North sans Cincinnati. How do you like them apples? That whole division other than Cincinnati. Frauds! Can you say it with me? I mean, Baltimore, that performance in Pittsburgh, dropping touchdown passes, crumbling late, letting Pickett to Pickens beat you. This terrible Pittsburgh team that can't do anything offensively. Baltimore's a fraud. So is Pittsburgh. And Cleveland, you know, look, you lose Deshaun Watson for one game and you see what that team is. Their defense was exposed last week. At 2-3, by the way, you could get Cincinnati right now at plus 450 or plus 460 to win the AFC North. How are you not running to your nearest legal bookmaking institution and placing that wager? How are you not doing it? They have the longest odds to win the AFC North. Have you seen the rest of that division? How are you not betting on Cincinnati right now to win the AFC North? I certainly would if I was in a legal bookmaking state, but of course I'm not, because California sucks. When it comes to sports betting, it sucks. Only when it comes to sports betting does it suck. So my pretenders this week, the entire AFC North other than the Cincinnati Bengals. How easy was that? Contenders? It's a little different. Yeah, the Cincinnati Bengals are a contender again. When you look at the AFC right now, yes, Kansas City still impresses me. I like what they're doing. They find ways to win every week. Go on the road in Minnesota, handle the Vikings. You know, the Kelsey ankle injury, they still found a way. Every week, Kansas City finds a way to win. You cannot look at Kansas City and say, well, this is wrong, this is wrong. You've got to look at the overall picture. The team just finds ways to win every week. And other than the week where they were missing Travis Kelsey in week one, and Detroit went into Kansas City and surprised them, and it's a great win for Kansas City, by the way. For Detroit, by the way, you've got to love what Kansas City is doing so far. To me, still the best team in the AFC. Period. Full stop. The Falcons. This is so hard for me to say. And I know the NFC South is garbage. And I have to give the Falcons love, because I crushed Desmond Ridder for the first 4 weeks for his lack of passing ability, his lack of accuracy, his inability to win games with his arm. Make no mistake about it, he won a game with his arm this week. He made some big plays. Kyle Pitts all of a sudden made an appearance, had like six catches or seven catches for 87 yards or 89 yards. It was one of the best Kyle Pitts games that we've seen in a long time. If they can get that kind of consistency from Desmond Ridder, they're going to win that division. Who are you going to pick? Who are you going to pick against them? Don't give me New Orleans. They clubbed baby seals. That's what playing the Patriots is like. So to me, Atlanta right now is a contender to win their division. I need one more contender, don't I?
You only had two?
No, I had a third written down, and I was vacillating on it. I'm going to go Jacksonville. Here's the thing about Jacksonville. They're a top 10 defense. They're a top 10 defense, and they've shown enough flashes to me offensively that I have to believe. And again, I'm not talking about contender to win a Super Bowl here. We're talking about contenders to be in the postseason, to be part of the picture, to be part of the conversation. And right now, I think you'd have to look at Jacksonville and say they are obviously a contender when you look at that division and obviously what the AFC South sort of is. The inability for Anthony Richardson to stay healthy. Is it Gardner Minshew's team or is it Anthony Richardson's team? We never know from week to week. AFC South to me feels like a Jacksonville division. Don't count out Tennessee. Mike Vrabel's always got his team in a position, and at the end of the year, with 3 weeks left, we'll be talking about Tennessee being in the mix. But to me right now, it's still a Jacksonville division. That's contender pretender. Let me say this, Sam, by the way, because I mentioned this on the show yesterday, and I want to get your reaction. And again, I'm not flashing. I told you last week that I wasn't going to overreact if Buffalo lost this game because the travel and all that stuff, you know, the injuries. And you've got to be, if you are a Buffalo Bills fan, which I know you are, you have to be worried about these injuries on the defensive side of the ball, regardless of the fact that Jacksonville still couldn't score last week when we're talking about the long-term prospects of the Bills. And here's another thing. I mentioned this yesterday on the show. They've played two really good defenses this year, and they've lost both those games. They lost to the Jets. They lost to Jacksonville. And those are two good defenses. So if you want something, not red flashing sirens, it's only week five, going into week six. If you want something to be concerned about if you're a Bills fan, look at the fact they've played two really good defenses and didn't play that well. I don't care what they did late in that game. Jacksonville's playing to the scoreboard late in that game. They sleepwalked through the first three quarters of that game, too. But still, against two good defenses, some concern about what Buffalo has done. Go ahead.
I think that there is... listen, it's very hard to be a Bills fan in the media, as many Bills fans will understand, because there's a prevailing tendency in Bills Mafia to just say, oh, season's over, or oh, we're the best team in the world. And there's really no in between. And those who go against that are considered opposition. And I'm not going against that. I bleed Bills Mafia blue to my core. That said, this is a predicament. This is a predicament unlike the Bills have been in before, right? You look at last season and what they faced. Von Miller goes down, tears his ACL. Micah Hyde has the neck injury. Those are two of your biggest defensive players. This year, incredibly similar, except one more. Now it's Tre'Davious White, Matt Milano, all pro, and Daquan Jones, who this season is having a career year. On offense, Ken Dorsey is having the same problems that he did last year. And when you talk about good defenses, it's not just that. It's not good defenses, because there are defenses that on paper are as skilled as the teams that you mentioned. It's the defensive coordinators and the ability to scheme against the Bills offense. The offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, as I mentioned, Ken Dorsey, has no ability seemingly to scheme his weapons open. It's in my opinion, the main reason for the regression of Gabe Davis, right? Brian Daboll had Gabe Davis as a focal point in that offense, especially on third down when he needed a guy to go to up top, right? To get a few yards. Brian Daboll did so many things that I think many Bills fans and many members of the media took for granted. And Ken Dorsey, while still being, I believe, a top 20, maybe even 15 offensive coordinator in the NFL, he lacks ability to scheme the specific weapons that the Bills have open. And it's created a real problem. The run balance this year has been great. James Cook looks awesome. I'm happy with that. Realistic expectations for the season fell off a cliff with the Matt Milano injury. He is the centerpiece of that defense. I don't consider the Bills a Super Bowl favorite by any means anymore. Don't really think they're a Super Bowl contender right now. Think it's going to be pretty hard for them to make the playoffs coming out of the AFC East.
Wow.
I'm going to root for them every weekend. I always do. it's going to be a lot harder to bet the Bills now. I know. Good thing we made these 20. Well, now we're up 23 units after the double unit on the under, the Lunder. Hope you rode. Yeah, good thing we made our units early because the Bills team is going to be very different going forward, Jason.
All right. Before we go, real quick, odds and ends, and in particular, the baseball today. Astros plus 108 on the road in Minnesota. Sonny Gray versus Christian Javier. Twins are minus 126. That series tied up at a game apiece. Orioles try to stave off elimination against the Rangers. That's the late game. Dean Kramer for the Orioles. Nathan Eovaldi for the Rangers. Rangers on the verge of going to the ALCS. And it's amazing. In the National League, you've got the Diamondbacks. One win away from the NLCS. And in the American League, you've got the Rangers one win away from the ALCS. And get ready for it, because when this season's all said and done, and the Diamondbacks send the Dodgers home, and the Orioles get sent home by the Rangers, and you saw, yeah, you're going to hear the conversation about they've got to do something as it relates to these teams that have to get 5 or 6 days off from the end of the regular season to when their next series starts. You're going to hear it. I'm telling you right now, I could already hear the drum beating on the fact that the rust versus rest, that the rust is the prevailing sort of theme that comes out of this, and you've got teams that come out of these breaks that are struggling. It's going to be interesting to see how Major League Baseball handles this, because you've got your best teams, Atlanta, who should have lost yesterday, the Dodgers, the Orioles, these teams that had great regular seasons that are all dying right now in the postseason, the Braves getting that crazy win yesterday. But, I mean, this isn't good for baseball to have, you know, the Diamondbacks and the Rangers basically running roughshod through the postseason right now when they barely got into the playoffs as, like, the third wild card.
Yeah, I think so. It's a nuanced issue, right? And I think the honestly, my opinion, and this is just my opinion, I'm not saying it's the right opinion at all. Let's go back to what we were doing 20 years ago. Honestly, like, it worked. MLB wants to add every team to the playoffs and make sure everybody gets a trophy and everybody makes the wild card, and we have 18 teams that get a chance at the World Series every year. And, you know, listen, I rooted for a wild card team that won the World Series. It was awesome, but it was also great because that wild card game was a one game series, and one crucial mistake in that game, yep, gave the Nationals the win, gave the Nationals a chance at the World Series, and they took advantage of it, right? So let's go back to the original format. But I love all the back and forth. It's great how Philly fans are like, oh, we got to change the playoff format. Oh, we don't. Oh, now we do, based on whether or not their team wins. I think that's awesome. Thought it was awesome to see Bryce Harper making a fundamental baseball mistake, because he's always too concerned about making the flashy play, and he's quite frankly a very mid baseball player who gets injured way too much, but no one wants to accept that. He hasn't really been that good since he was 25. Sure, we can continue to talk about these things. It continues to keep baseball in the news, which, as you and I who are baseball loving people know, that's what baseball needs, to stay in the news. So Bryce, keep being your dumb self, keep doing the stupid things you were doing as a 19-year-old in Dodger Stadium. Yeesh. Or a 21-year-old getting swept out of the playoffs by the Giants. Yeesh. I love to see it. It feels really good for me. Braves, wow, in four. Braves, right, in four.
He says Braves in four. It's going to wrap it up for us, this edition of the Sports Wrap. It's a wrap. Thank you to Bill Bender for stopping by from the Sporting News. Russell Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com. Sammy Arnell, always fun, my friend. We'll do it again tomorrow. Matter of fact, Sam will be doing it by himself tomorrow. How about them apples? Sam Yarnell rides solo tomorrow on the Sports Wrap.
Wednesdays with the Prince.
Can't wait to hear what that sounds like. We'll see you all back here tomorrow. I'm Jason Page.